Okay, that's right.
Tell me what work you've been doing on this page. I don't see it significantly different. All right, I'm looking at the page from 2 weeks ago, January 19th, and when I compare that to what you have now, I don't see what's different. Talk to me.
It was my same notes.
Okay. So what did you hear or write down as the homework from last class?
I didn't know we got any homework from last class.
Put on your recording, son. Start your recording right now. Just start recording this session, okay? Okay.
Okay, I did it.
All right. Where is your text chat from last class?
It is in my file, my computer.
In your file? Pull it up.
Okay. Okay, I'm getting it. I don't see it right now, but I'm just letting you know that I'm
still. And here, you said you don't see it right now, but I didn't hear the last part.
I said, but I'm still letting you know that I'm still
looking. Okay.
I'm not sure. The only thing I see is my little one access on my iPhone.
Well, you know, your responsibility is to save your text chat and to study it. You also can review, depending on if you need to. You go to your text chat or you go to your notes from the class, and there's a concept that you don't really remember. If you think that there's a class that you have with me and you don't have homework, unless you're working on an ongoing project, then you know you're sadly mistaken. Okay, minimally you need to review, you need to study. That's just on a, you know, so that you be ready for this class, and you know, for the upcoming class, how you want to prepare. Okay, but your responsibility is, just because you see me recording, you know, and I intentionally didn't put up the video on or the text chat this time. I put it up for every other class because I also want you to not to become dependent upon me doing that. You're supposed to take the text chat, put it on the wiki, connect it to your page so that you can go back to see it, so that your parents can go to see it. You can go and review. You know, sometimes it's a wonderful link in there. Actually, there's a lot of good links in there. So that's just housekeeping, brother. You know, we just got to, you know, take care of that. So that's you know, in place. All right. So let's review some of the things just real quick from last class. I asked you your last time to write down the IMF. There was some and what is the IMF? Do you remember that?
The International Monetary Fund.
And so what is the International Monetary Fund?
It's an organization. It's like dealing with the government, and it's like the global system of money, like kind of like a global money structure. It deals with all the exchange rates from different countries.
Oh, really? So tell me where you got your information from. Give me a link or give me a source. Welcome, Abdullah. Glad that you're here, brother. And what exactly is that link?
Okay, I'm getting one now.
Abdullah, what is this link?
It's actually to some of the research I did on the gold standard versus fiat.
So, okay, so you want to have that discussion? I don't remember that being an assignment, but if you want to have that discussion, all right, what do you want to say?
I thought it was an assignment for me because you taking the assignment from me.
Oh, okay, all right, great, it was an assignment for you. Okay, so is this the only source that you went to in your research?
No, there are two other ones. Let me get on with
it. All right, please.
There's the first thing that I found when I had searched it.
All right, I want you to read that and come up with a statement so that you have a cogent statement of what the International Monetary Fund is and what it does. Okay.
You want me to read it on the mic?
No, not on the mic. I want you to read it and extract from it and put it in the text chat. So when somebody asks you what the International Monetary Fund is, you're able to say, the International Monetary Fund is, boom, 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 boom. And you can say 1, 2, 3, or 4. And what you choose, what you extract or choose is what you put in the text chat. So that's what we're going to be saying. All right. All right, Abdullah, I'm looking for your other 2 or 3 or whatever one. Okay, that seems to be the same one.
I know, I relisted this time all of them together.
Oh, that's not cool because they don't come up. Okay, I see. All right, so that's another one over there. Okay, that's Reason for Liberty. I see. And they get economics. All right. Okay, so tell me what you learned, brother.
Okay, one of the sources, I believe, there's actually somebody that asked the question, how is gold money better, more safe than fiat currency? And he brought up a good point when he said that the gold price can appreciate and depreciate, it can just, depreciate and appreciate. Wait 1 second. Okay, sorry about that. There's some noise in the background. Okay. I'm still on the reasonforliberty.com. They're saying that gold-backed currency is still more stable and mostly immune to inflation than paper fiat money is, which I found it was very interesting because I thought that in the Secret of Oz, Bill Steele was saying that fiat money was more stable than the gold standard. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, what have you see? Part of what you're doing is you're working, and we're studying an area that is highly contentious. It's not like an area that is already settled. People have different opinions. Like people have different opinions about abortion. Some people says it's okay. Some people says it's morally reprehensible. So you'll find different versions of it. So part of your researching is to see what the different arguments are many people have, and then what yours are. What do you think? Okay. So because you read this and they said that it's greater, which argument is more compelling to you?
After reading this,
which one is this? You gave me 3 sites.
Oh, after reading Reason for Liberty and seeing where the question was coming from, I actually was believing that I'm starting to believe that gold-backed currency is more stable than paper fiat currency because it's more immune to inflation. And they were saying that go ahead.
Well, the question is, how did the question of stability become the central question?
Nothing. I'm just saying that that's a major plus on the gold standard side because if you don't have stability and you're always at risk of inflation, I mean, what is the use of having that currency?
Oh, I see. So now 2 things that you got to, I'm glad you're getting into it. So one part you want you to put down is stability and the other is inflation. Okay. In your reading, did anybody discuss what are the causes of inflation? Yes or no, sir? Did they discuss?
Oh, sorry. I was pressing the wrong button. No. Well, I think from my reading, I didn't get a clear understanding of it, but I think from the information that I gathered from my reading is when a level of prices skyrocket because there's a little bit of currency circulating in the community.
Oh, okay. So from your reading, you think that inflation happens whenever there is a little currency and that causes inflation when there's a little currency in the system. Okay. You can just note that. Now, yes, let's see, who is that? Thank you, Mama Ayamaat. They have no internet connection today. I'm sorry, I didn't report that. I got a call from Allende's mother that they have no internet connection today. Wait a minute, I think I'm talking, but she's not hearing me. Just a second. Folks, where is... Be right back, folks. His mother... Hi, Mama. Allende's mother called and said, or he called and said they have no internet connection or connectivity. I hadn't thought about calling her back to confirm that. I hadn't even occurred to me to do that until just now.
But he's okay.
He's okay.
Sit there for a while.
Yeah, he's all right. You know, I told him to work on the stuff that he could without internet connectivity. I may shoot his mom an email just to see. All right, let me get back to class.
Okay.
All right, take care. Thank you for asking. Yes, Santi Sana. All right, great. I'm black. Okay. So now, and I haven't read your articles, and I think it's cool. What I'm just responding to is what I have now. And part of what I'm wanting to teach all of us is when you're dealing with a subject. This is part of dealing with social studies, and regardless of the subject, and you're dealing with social, you know, matters. There are many different perspectives and views, okay, on how do you solve a social problem. That's different from a mathematical problem. Because there typically is, you know, okay, if I'm going to 5 times 5, I can add 5 times, or I can remember the timetables. But basically, you know, there's less, although there is certainly in math and in engineering and science, there's certainly some contentions, different approaches. But when you're dealing with, and when you're dealing with social problems, there are many different factors that impact on it, many more than often when you're dealing with finite material, like, you know, whether you are mining something or you're building a structure or whatever. I mean, it has whatever weight it has, and you got to have something to handle that weight or move it or whatever. When you're dealing with a social problem, there are many different factors and views, and so you have a lot more contentious. It takes the skill of a mathematician with the flexibility of an artist in order to navigate the social problems. Okay, now you cannot escape it, because if you don't have a decision, people will make decisions for you when it comes to social things, about your money, about your life chances, about justice, about whatever. So I long time ago knew, and I love science, physical science, and physics was something that I really was into, electron shells and all of that. And at the same time, I love social science, and realize that the number of variables and the changeability or the variability of those variables were much more frequent in social stuff, social issues. And so I needed to be even more careful than I am with scientific and mathematical formulations and problems, because sometimes they move. It's a kind of moving target, and required that it took a mind that was sharper, actually, because you had to, a combination of that, a sharp kind of mind of focusing on details, and at the same time, one that's like a fluid, like an artist, because things change. Now, the reason I just say that for you is because when we're dealing with an issue, you have many perspectives. And just like a scientist, you got to focus on, so Abdullah uses, you know, your reading says gold is better because it hedges against inflation. Now, were you in the class, Abdullah, where we talked about, and this is a good thing that you bring it up, that you talked about, we talked about Mansa Musa?
No, I don't think so.
All right, well, I want you to go back and do it in the text chat, and you can read and go on Wikipedia. But the short of it is Mansa Musa, African king, Mali, 13th century, converted to Islam, takes a trip to Mecca, as any good Muslim will do if they can, according to the religious edicts. On his way, he takes like hundreds of people, 60 camels, 30 pounds of gold. I think 30 pounds of gold for each camel. Excuse me, 300 pounds of gold. Every Friday he built a mosque on his trip. So wherever he was, built a mosque. When he got to, you know, and on his way, and in Egypt, and Mecca, he gave people money, gold. And do you remember Nima? What said? Thank you. Trained 80 camels, varying reports carrying 500. Okay, wonderful. Okay, and there are other reports where you get some more details. Do you remember, or if you're on that page, Abdullah, reading what happened when he gave folks the money? What does this say? Anima, do you remember? Or Tavon, do you remember?
I do. Because more people had money, the merchants everywhere started to raise their prices, and just because money was so common now and it wasn't rare anymore, they started to raise their prices and demand more money for their products.
Ibn Abdullah, could it be that we have a gold standard and Mansa brings more gold in, and now we have inflation? How could that be? Because we have a gold standard. And a gold standard is a hedge against inflation. And, you know, things only get inflated when you have scarce currency, you said, okay, from what you're reading. Now, how do you put those two together?
Okay, I can see your point. So,
well, see, what I want you to do, okay, is I want you to, like as we study this, to get to know the different parts without deciding. You're looking for simplistic solutions, okay, and to account for the different variables, all right, in it. Now, when we said we had Aya money, okay, the Aya dollar, you know, based on the only way people could get your computer services and Tavon's vegetables and Afia and Nima's great artwork, was to have that currency. Inflation is nothing inherent in the money. Form of money for inflation. That we could be trading black rocks as our medium of exchange, and there's nothing inherent in the medium of exchange that says there's going to be inflation. In that example, gold was a medium of exchange. So Monster, you know, threw 200 on me, and I wanted to go down and buy some of Tavon's corn, and he was selling his best corn for 2 gold pieces. I said, no problem, here you go, brother. Why inflation? Inflation is not necessarily a natural phenomenon. Okay? You can't separate what happens with money and the people that you're dealing with, and the people's appetites and their proclivities. And this is important because we will decide that it's inherent in a money system when it may be inherent in how people use the money system. That is their values. All right. If we're in... let's say we're in ancient Tanzania, and we're trading with cowrie shells. And we, just like we have the Aya dollars, why, let's put it between us. So we got, you got your computer stuff and Nima's art and whatever. Why we need inflation? Why would we inflate the price of your computer services? If you could get corn. Go ahead.
So I can get more money?
Why do you need more money if you got corn? Get Tavon's corn and he, you know, wants to relax from all that hard day work and want to see some beautiful, you know, sights even in the wintertime, so he got Nima's art. We're going to put a pin in it, and I just want you to keep in, because people will say that, you know, this inflation is here. Now, there's a lot of things in the current economy that people do to cause inflation, and different things causes inflation in the sense of it causes a reaction. I want you to be able to separate what people do in a particular system that causes inflation in that system. That's separate from that inflation is inherent in a either gold system or a cowrie shell system or Aya dollar system. One question would be good to ask. since Efe's paper exposed you to a number of communities, one in Ithaca, New York, it would be good to find out if there's inflation in the Ithaca dollars, isn't it? Do you think that? Why do you think that would be interesting? Do you think that would be interesting at all? Think that would tell us something?
I do, because then it would kind of prove that, I mean, with any kind of currency, you could have inflation.
Well, you can have inflation. There's no question about you can have inflation, okay? But inflation is not like something out of the sky. It's not like Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, you know, or the sun, you know. See, inflation is not necessarily a natural phenomenon. This is important. Inflation is caused because people say they want to make more money. Suppose you get all your needs met as it is. So why you need more money? Suppose you're raising your prices creates an imbalance. If a community values balance, if that's a really high value, then there will be a push against, you know, inflation. Let's say if we were bartering, no medium of exchange, goods for goods, services for services, or goods for services, and you know, a direct barter. Tavon has some of the best zucchini, most nutritious, and he needs his computer fixed so he can communicate with markets across the world. He'll give you a bushel of that if you'll fix his computer. How do we put inflation in a bartering system? Think about it. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. This is just working with you. How would inflation go in a bartering system?
Yes, you could charge more for your services. Like if Tavon gets more corn, then instead of me charging him 2 years of corn, if you're out charging like 20 years of corn, then I know he got some more corn.
Okay, so if he raised his prices, and you raise your prices, what do we got? Bartering system. He says, man, I mean, you know, you tell him, in order to do that, I got to have 20, you know, ears of corn. And he says, well, well, in order for me to give you 20 ears of corn, I got to have, you know, or he raises his prices to Nima, who needs some other stuff. And then Nima raised her prices. And in a bartering system, guess what it does? If anybody raises their prices.
It
starts, but then if everybody raises their prices in order to keep getting what they need, then you got balance again.
Okay, so it eventually create balances out.
That's right, in that kind of system, because the value is in people's labor and their work and their smarts and, you know, what they exchange with each other. Okay, I want you to keep it in mind is because I just don't want you to go for things that like are inherent, like inflation is kind of like it's God given. It's just gonna be inflation, okay? You may want to one of you. It's not you don't have to, but if you want to explore this, you might want to email or call one of the brothers or people. I don't know their ethnicity. Call one of the people at Ithaca Hours or email them. Efe had been in touch with some of them, but they'll respond to email and ask them about inflation. In fact, you might even ask them to come to class and talk about inflation in Ithaca. I will tell them we're studying it. We'll advertise it, see if we can get some parents and other people to come. That's an option if any of you want to take that on. Okay. Right now, I just want you to note that when someone says this fiat currency is all right, so you got the argument from your source that the gold standard is more stable and less likely to is a hedge against inflation. Now, what are the arguments against a gold currency? So you got both of them. I want you to just know what those arguments are. What's the argument so far that y'all have learned against a gold currency?
I think it was something like if it will be controlled by the banks, and it will be controlled by the banks, and they could, and the government will have to like will have to borrow it, and then the banks will charge interest on it, and they will have to pay that interest, and they will get deeper and deeper into debt, and they would use their borrowed money to try to get out of debt, and they would go deeper into debt.
You got to separate a couple of things. You get too many things in there. That is, the gold standard is separate from debt, interest-free money. That is, fiat currency, you know, can be issued debt-free without an interest. And gold-backed money can be issued without interest. Okay, so what you pay to what we now call the Federal Reserve or the bankers, the extra interest that a government pays, that's separate and apart from whether or not there's a gold standard or there's a not a gold standard. Do y'all get that? I want to make sure that y'all are clear about that.
Yes.
Abdullah, do you understand that?
I do.
Okay. So one issue that you need to know about that's separate from gold standard or not, I don't mean it's not related, but it's you have a central bank and the government, this government borrows money from the central bank at interest. So if it borrows $1 trillion, it has to pay back $1 trillion plus 10% or whatever they're charging. Okay, so that means the government is in debt to the bankers, okay, and to other investors in that way. Now, the other option is for the government to issue in this currency, print it, issue it, and it doesn't borrow it from anybody. It says this is government-backed currency. And so if it's government-backed currency and legal tender, that means everybody has to accept the money. If you want to pay for something, if I'm selling something, and, you know, that's there. And that part is, that's what the people... The author, Bill Steele, is advocating, mostly what he's advocating is a currency system where we don't borrow, the government doesn't borrow money in order to run the government. That the government prints money to run the government, as opposed to borrowing it and then being indebted to private bankers. That's the main piece. Y'all with me on that? Y'all got him? Bill Steele on that?
Yeah.
Now, along the way, there are issues about gold standard versus the fiat. Now, the reason that comes in, well, if the government issues money, now, any system, you can have abuse, right? We had the gold standard in the 1932 and before the stock market crash of 32. And there was one before that in the 20s. You see what I'm saying? That is, any system can be abused. What controls the abuse of the system is the social system that's there and the social values of the people. Right? When people value balance and equity, they don't tolerate an abusive system. When people value superiority and inferiority, domination, that's their value, then that will be showing up in the money system and the money, how they choose to use the money. Whether it's a gold standard or not, the scarcity systems are systems that are more prone to domination, be used for domination. Okay, and so let's say I got a lot of gold, and you don't have much. I got lots. I mean lots. And am I rich? Richer than you? If we got the gold standard? Can I get your gold if I got a lot and you got a little bit? I'll talk back. It's just three people in the room, you know. Just use some, you know, verbal stuff. How can I get your gold since I got a lot of gold and you got a little bit? Yvonne, you go first. Yvonne, come on, go first.
Okay, sorry. No, I'm still thinking. I'm still thinking.
Okay. Dula?
Oh, you could, since we have a little bit of money, you could, give out loans to us and charge interest on them, and then you get some of our gold out of it.
Okay, so you got a little bit of money, but you want a really nice car, and you want a super duper computer. So you can really, you know, blow some video games out. And it's like, okay, great. So, you know, I'll loan you some money and you're going to pay me interest. So you pay me back what I had, plus you pay me more. Then what I also do is I start manipulating your tastes. You see, because what I want you to do is to believe that not only do you have less money than me, but because you have less money than me, you are inferior to me. Your house is not big enough. Your car is not fast enough. You know, your screen TV is not clear enough. You don't get as many channels as I do. And that means you are less than I am. Right? If that's the case, okay. Now, you remember that, Abdullah, were you here when we listened to the Amos Wilson clip? What makes you want to do what you want to do?
Yes, listen to that.
Okay, so that's the psychology. And part of the purpose of this class is to understand the connection between the psychology, particularly the psychology of oppression, and economics. Because you can't make sense out of this economic conundrum without it. And whether that's class oppression or race oppression, you know, gender oppression, okay, etc. Part of the whole notion of oppression, which is superior, inferior. One group is superior, the other group is inferior. And if I can, since I got more money and I got a bigger house and I got a bigger car and I got a little more bling bling here, and of course if I'm in America, that means I got more women, okay, and all of that means that I am better. I'm a better man than you, either one of you peons are. So now that I've manipulated your taste, I made you feel ugly, so you got to have makeup. Okay, and you got to have other people's hair because yours is whack. No matter that it will pull yours out, but you got to have other people's hair. Then now, since I've manipulated your taste, then you want things beyond what your money, the money you have, and the goal that you have. So again, then now you're even more compelled to do what Abdullah suggested, and you'll do it at a greater interest rate. That will put you further in my debt. Okay, and so you will have those things that make you feel better and feel like a real man or woman, as opposed to somebody that's inferior. And you will also be in captivity because you'll be in my debt. You have lost your goal. Now switch that around. Let's use those Aya dollars again, and we have the Tavon got his skill, and Abdullah has his skill, and Babu Kessa, you know, got his skills, and Safiya and everybody. How can we have it be, we have a little stronger hedge, because I have some skills, and you need those skills, and I'm like that air conditioning repair guy who retired and was in Ithaca. You know what? Do y'all remember what he said?
He said that if the Ithaca hours made him feel like useful again.
Yeah, useful again. Because part of our work is for money, but it's also to contribute. Because I don't feel like I'm doing something. I'm somebody. I'm worth something. Okay. And so those Ithaca hours that people had that weren't now controlled by other people. They could use to pay him. He could get some of the goods and services he wanted, and he could also get the affirmation that comes. And you know, you got, I mean, Tavon, suppose you grew things and nobody, no matter what you grew, nobody wanted them. And Abdullah, nobody wanted your computer services. Or suppose everybody wanted them, but nobody had any money to buy them with. See, you not only would have an economic problem, but you also have a psychological problem, okay? And, you know, so money is about a social system and how social people relate, and we get the things that we need. It's, you know, we've just gone through a little bit of how having all of the gold and creating a sense of scarcity is a way for me to maintain domination. It's a little harder in a system where it's based, where it's more equitable. Whereas social stratification, what people put into the economy, you know, exchange with each other, and when the dollars are based on goods and services that people put in, their skill, their labor, their talent. And so, again, we're shifting back and forth between, like, what's to conceive of an economic system that doesn't feed oppression and the different components of it. And so when we read the other things, even the folks are like, the problem I have with money is debt. Okay, I have two good things. The best things out of money is debt are fractional reserves. Okay, now everybody knows what those are, right? All right, Abdullah, what's fractional reserve?
I'm actually not sure. Let me look it up real quick.
Okay, all right, Tavon, what's fractional reserve?
I'm not sure.
Yikes, y'all. Okay, fractional reserve. Y'all can look it up later. Let me just make it plain like this, and then you can go and look it up in a more formal way. The two of us want to go and get a bank, okay? And so so here's how that worked, what you just put in there, Abdullah, because I want you to look it up, but I also want you to understand it in your head, because you can look it up, cut and paste it, and forget it, and I ask you sometimes later, and you don't necessarily know how it works or what it really is, okay? So I'm glad you looked it up, but now I want you to pay attention. You and me and Tavon want to open a bank. So we got $2 million from Tavon, $2 million from Abdullah, $2 million from me. So we got $6 million. We say the central bank, we want to start a bank. The central bank approves our application with $6 million. And so typically you would think that we can now lend out our $6 million, because that's extra dollars that we made on whatever. So we're going to put these $6 million and we're going to loan them to people at interest, and we'll make money based on what they do. So let's do me a little math. So $6 million, let's say we can put it out for 10% interest, and it comes back. So when that 10% interest, if we hypothetically, if we all lend it out to you know, 1,000 people at one time or something like that, and it was all due back. So on that due back date at 10% interest, how much money are we making?
$60,000. Wait, $600,000.
Okay. All right. Which one is it? Come on, Tavon, weigh in on it.
$600,000.
Okay, so we've lent out $6 million, and we've got 10% back, so we got $600 million profit. That's not so bad, right? Over $500,000 profit. Okay. Now, here's what the fractional reserve is, because that's not a fractional reserve. That's, we've got $6 million. We lend $6 million, and we get interest back. You know, that's assuming no defaults and all that stuff like that. All right. Now, the central bank says, tell you what, you can actually, now that you have on deposit $6 million, you can actually lend 9 times that much. That is, on reserve, you only have to have a fraction of the money that you can lend out and earn interest on. So now, let's go.
They were talking about that in the Secret of Oz, how they were saying how the banks were loaning money that they didn't even have.
That's right. Yeah, they were. That's part. But see, here, what I want you to get is, you got to understand the concepts. I don't want you to just watch a movie. You can do it, and that's why I want y'all to come with questions. And y'all ain't come enough with questions to say, wow, I really don't understand that. Okay. So my job is to break it down so that you really get it, and then you can go back and say, okay, I get it, or then I don't get it, and that kind of thing. All right. We don't just cover material here. There's nobody overlooking with Kessa and saying, you got to teach this, and you got to be on this page, you got to be on that page. I'm only concerned about developing our critical thinking skills and using issues and things that will help us and the world doing that. Okay, so now, y'all, how much money can we lend? The central bank says we got to have is a fraction on reserve. So now we can lend how much? Because we started with 6 million. 9 times that is how much, how many million?
54 million.
So it's not 6 million, it's 54 million. Okay, now, so now, how much interest at 10%, same little hypothetical example, we send it out, it's coming back in, they pay us our money back, and they pay us 10% interest, so how much are we going to make?
Oh, 5,400,000.
Wait a minute, so me and y'all, we put together our $2 million, $6 million, we put it to the central bank, we going to lend it out, and we get $5.4 million? Whoa! No wonder the bank is the biggest building in town. Understand fractional? Beginning to understand, because this is not all of you. You're beginning to understand fractional reserve?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that's the contribution of, and I want you to go back to see it, because there's a little more to it than that. And the simplest way to understand that is in the money is debt. you know, video. Okay. Now they also suggest the gold standard, whatever, but that's just something they suggest because they talking about how banking started. And of course, we know that's not how banking started. That's how European banking may have started. But that's not really the main point of the movie. The understanding the fractional reserve process, okay, is the main point of it. Now, there also is a part of the fractional reserve piece that the money you're supposed to have on reserve for people who, okay, so we got our $6 million in, and on that we can do 9 times, so we can lend 54. All right, suppose Nima comes in and she's had a bumper year with her art. I mean, you know, she's had pieces sell for $20 million. So she wants to put, you know, she know we're trying to have a business here. And, you know, after all, Abdullah is her brother. So she says, well, I'll put $2 million in savings in your bank. I'll just store it right there. You know, she's not a member of the bank, whatever. But she just puts $2 million in savings. So now, since that's in our banking savings, and we have like a 9-to-1, so now we can lend. How much money could we lend on her $2 million investment? I mean, not investment, savings.
$18 million.
Ooh. Man. So we lend, and we're supposed to keep some on reserve in case she wants all her money back. Because the whole theory is that nobody will want their money back at the same time. And after the bank failures of in the 1930s, the so-called 28 to 1940 crash that people generally say is 1932, the Great Depression, after that, there was something called FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. You'll see it whenever you go to banks, FDIC, and that means your deposits are approved. So if we go belly up, then the government is going to say, Nima, okay, the bank, we liquidated the bank, and we were able to get of your $2 million, we got $1 million from the bank, and then we're going to give you the rest, okay? That's the federal deposit. So that means, now part of what that means for me, you, and Tavon, Abdullah, is that we can be a little risky with these, what we, you know, invest in, the money that we lend. Because after all, you know, they're gonna back me up. I want you to understand that we got some serious, serious rich people welfare going on here. Okay? Y'all, do you see it? I can make risky investments with Nima's money. Because if I fail, government is going to pay her money. Well, you just stay with it. This unfortunately, you'll learn this country was just created by thieves. I'm sorry, and they're not interested in running it differently. So a whole bunch of things are con game. But you know, I want you to be more specific than that. I want you to know how it works. Some of it you can do. You know, you're gonna have to just learn how to navigate, regardless of what it's called. Okay. So it's not quite a con game. Okay. And I mean, that doesn't quite fit for here. It's just because they put it out front. You see on the thing, you go there, it says FDIC. You know, it's not hidden. They'll tell you what FDIC is. So what you got to understand is government policies and how they work to support certain people in the economy and to not support other people in the economy. Okay? So, y'all, now, we got Nima's money in. Now we can lend $18 million, let's say that Allende comes in for a loan. He wants to. He went to Berkeley and graduated top of his class. He wants to go on this tour or wants to get this wonderful piano, and it's going to cost him $100,000, and he doesn't want to use his little savings, and he doesn't have as much as he needs to, so he wants to borrow $100,000 from us. Okay, you got it. Now, where do we go get the money from to give him? Do we go get some cash from the central bank and then run it down and give it to him? How does he get this $100,000? Nope, we don't even have to get it from our bank. Okay, this is where you got to watch. You got to watch. This is the part of money is debt. I really just want you to focus particularly on the fractional reserves, which you got to watch that again. Okay? Nope, we don't get it from the Federal Reserve. When we type in the loan, money is made. Most of the money in existence is not in print. It's not dollars and cents and whatever. Okay? Most of the money is created, and this is the other part of money as debt, okay, that when you go to take out a loan, then the bank puts it in the computer, and then that creates the money. So you get a check, print it, new money, okay? All right, and now Allende takes that money, and he goes to another bank. Oh, Allende goes to another bank, gets $100,000, excuse me. He wants to get a piano. But since he's friends with us, he comes and he deposits that into his account at our bank. Okay. So now we get that $100,000. So we got that on reserve, so that money. So now we can lend up to what? 9 times that much. And then so we have somebody who comes and wants something. So they take that money out, that 9 times that much. Or if NEMA, you know, doesn't matter whichever one you use. And then they go and put it in their bank. That bank can do what? 9 times that or 8 times that much. Then that comes back to a bank. And that bank can do 6 times that much. And that bank... Do y'all understand how much money? And that's what I want you to. So you gotta go back to get that little concept. And that money movie is short, so you gotta watch that again. And the key piece is how money is created by debt. Okay, so you see, there is the debt part that the government use from Federal Reserve. I mean, because the government buys money and has to pay the money back plus interest. So the nation is in debt. That's done a lot more with and the secret of Oz. Money as debt is more how money is created when a person goes into debt. When Allende wants that $100,000 so he can buy a piano, then money is created, but it's created exponentially. This is the mathematicians in the room, okay? He's not just created one-on-one. We don't just go into our bank and says, okay, here, I'm going to give you the $100,000, Allende, okay? We create it just on the computer. And he got new money. New money is into the economy that never been there before. And he deposited to his other bank, and then that bank can lend up to 9 times that much. Woo! Off of money that was just never existed. That was just created based on us punching. So that process, I want you to make sure that you understand in from money is debt. Are y'all with me on that? That's fractional reserve. So you got to go back and listen to that part and get it, or get questions, or whatever. Okay, I'm not trying to have y'all just take stuff. Like everything that I have you watch, I don't subscribe to everything in every video or every book. Period. There's not a book that I know of that I read that I've read and I agree with everything in it. Okay, those are very very rare. Okay, some come close, but you know and. And I can learn one part without taking the whole thing. So I'm not taking the gold standard is inherently better from money as debt, although they imply it. But I am wanting to take an understanding of fractional reserves, how that works in a central bank, and then how money is created out of debt. Those are two things I want you to know and be able to explain to a 5-year-old. And if you can't explain it to a 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old, then you don't understand it. Are with me on that? This is the world you are living in, and that you will become adults in soon. You got to know how to make choices, because the system is designed to play you like a fiddle. You know, manipulating what you think you need in order for you to be somebody, because they've convinced you that you're not. Unless you have 52-inch rims or whatever your particular version of that is. Okay? And don't get me wrong, I believe in having great things and good things and wonderful things. Not to compensate for any feeling of inferiority or less thanness, or to prove my worth to somebody based on the utility of them. What is it I want to do with them? What is it I want to accomplish? So why do I need a house that's this big versus a small house and a big business that makes me more money and employs more people? Okay? See what I'm saying? I know millionaires who don't need Bentleys, don't have Bentleys, don't need Bentleys. Their house is a plain house. You would never know they were millionaires. You think they were either multimillionaires. You think they maybe make $80,000 a year. Now down the street from their $80,000 house is an office, and that office is a hub and connected to over 220 offices around the country. This multimillionaire's money is in business enterprises that are employing black people primarily. You see? So he got money. It's just who's manipulating what he needs. Okay? So y'all got that. Now, let's switch over back to the Secret of Oz. What I want you to get here, the Secret of Oz, is the fight in the country, white people's fight, between whether or not you're going to have a central banking system where the government borrowed the money from the bankers, or whether or not the government was going to issue the money debt free, okay, so that there wouldn't be any debt to the bankers. That's the key struggle I want you to get out of there. Okay? Now, in the beginning of that, he says, Franklin did it, Lincoln did it, Jefferson tried to do it. What do you know about the struggle? He says at the end there were six times of struggle between the bankers who wanted control of the money system and government who didn't want the bankers to have control of a money system and wanted to issue debt-free currency. What do you know about that fight? Who were some of the players? What's some of the drama? Hello? Did I lose everybody? Did I get too long with it? Okay, Nima's looking through her notes. What are you doing, Tavon? What are you doing? Abdullah? Okay. All right. Now, so I'm going to give you a couple of them, right? Now, we already said last class that part of the struggle in the American Revolutionary War was who was going to control the currency, right? Whether the British were going to control the currency or the colonists, because they weren't Americans yet, were going to control the currency. Y'all remember that? Okay. Now, so there, right, the British tried to stop the currency because, see, who controls your currency controls your life. Okay. If we make an agreement and we going to control our own currency, then, you know, just part of the reason part of the folks in Ithaca and 40 other communities have established their own supplemental currency is to have more control over their own life, you know, without dealing with whether the dollar is inflated or deflated. You know, if, you know, five Ithaca dollars will pay for my air conditioning to get fixed, then that person can take those five Ithaca dollars and still get a massage. Whatever, okay? So, you want to be understanding the, that whole piece. Okay, so now let's deal with the history and go through some of it. Now, he also says Ben Franklin did it. Does anybody remember, or do you have any of your notes of what he said about that? Let me just give you. Let me see if I can get this link to what. Okay, here it is, right here. So we're gonna bounce around, but I want you to keep the theme. The theme is we want to understand what is it. What are we in search of right here? Because Abdul, I really want to make sure you get it. Because many times you think we're just bouncing around, but you got to know what the theme is when you're doing research. So what is it? The question we're trying to answer right here. Anybody? What's the question that we're in search of? I asked you that you were looking for your notes for.
About debt-free.
No, give me the whole thing. I didn't just say go find debt-free. Gee, come on now. What's the question?
It was about Thomas Jefferson and what his part was in the... Yeah, Thomas Jefferson.
Well, you remember the overarching question, please write it down, put it in the text chat, okay? As I said, you want you to understand the struggle. This bill still says six times there have been struggles between the bankers controlling the money and America having to borrow the money from the bankers at interest, meaning they ought to pay back interest, or the government issuing money that is not have a debt attached to it. And they're not borrowing it from anybody. Okay? So what the struggles are, what's the history of that? Okay? What's the history in the United States of white people struggle with that? That's the question. That's what you said you're going to look in your notes for. Okay, come on, Abdullah, type it in the text chat.
Okay. One of the struggles was before the Revolutionary War, the American Revolutionary War, America was short on precious metal coins to trade, so they made colonial scrip, which was paper money, and Ben Franklin said that in the colonies.
Keep going. I heard in the colonies. Okay. All right. Well, you told me you were going to have to leave. All right. So let me give you a link. It'll be in the text chat. That's where we're going to be going to supplement The Secret of Oz. Okay. To look at this. All right. Abdullah, you still with me? And Tavon, you still with me?
Yes.
Okay. Click on that link. And keep in mind what we're looking for. There may be a little different facts and stuff that we're getting, but we're in search of this answer. What is the struggle? Okay. All right. You got that link in front of you? All right.
I have it up.
Okay, good. Now, this is the History of Money Part 2 from this site. And this is a site that actually also has people operating with different currency. Okay. All right, so according to this site, notice I'm saying according to this site. That's not like saying this is absolute fact, okay? But according to this site it is, and I may choose to believe it, and I may corroborate it or whatever. All right, so this starts to deal with part of Andrew Jackson's struggle with it. Now, Andrew Jackson was what president of the United States? This is 1828 to 1836. So the country was in, had already got, but I'm just going to deal with some of the struggles from here. And we'll go back. We got the, Enema said the continental currency, that continental script that was issued. We're going to talk a little bit about that. So that was one script that was issued. And it was not based on borrowing money. It was based on the government, and we'll get to that. All right. Now, let's... read that first paragraph, Abdullah, Andrew Jackson. I mean, that paragraph says Andrew Jackson, 1828 to 1836.
Okay. When the American Congress voted to renew the character of the Second Bank of the United States, Jackson responded by using his veto to prevent the renewal bill from passing. His response gives us an interesting insight. It is not our own citizens only who are to receive the bounty of the government. More than 8 million, more than 8 million of the stock of this bank are held by foreigners. Is there no danger to our liberty and independence in a bank that is, that in its nature has so little to bind it to our country? Controlling our currency, receiving our public monies, and holding thousands of our citizens in dependence would be more formidable and dangerous than the military power of the enemy. If the government will confine itself to equal protection and, as heaven does its rain, shower its favor alike on the high and the low, high and the low, the rich and the poor, it will be an unqualified blessing. In the act before me, there seems to be a wide and unnecessary departure from these just principles.
Okay, so now would you break down what you just read? What is Jackson, Andrew Jackson, 1836, American president, what is he saying here? What's your interpretation?
That he's afraid that the stock held by foreigners isn't good for the country, and he feels like he doesn't feel comfortable about other countries or foreigners, as he puts it, controlling the money in the country, and I believe he's talking about the British.
Okay, right. The paragraph above, you're right on the money. Excellent. In the paragraph above, that last sentence, it says the Rothschilds, these are rich white folks in England, had not only taken over the Bank of England, but they had also, in 1816, they backed a new privately owned central bank in America called the Second Bank of the United States, causing huge problems to the American president. The American president was Andrew Jackson, Okay? And this is what he's responded to. When the American Congress voted to renew the charter of the Second Bank of the United States. So the Congress got to decide. This is part of the struggle. Should we have a central bank or should we not have a central bank? Okay, that controls the currency. And he's saying that, wait a minute, this, you know, bank is backed. That is, backed means people who own it, okay, own lots of shares in it, by folks who are not in this country. So they may make decisions about the money and the money supply and when to lend it to us or not lend it to us or at what rate, okay, since we got to borrow it in order to run our government, by people who are not even in the country, who have no real interest here because they're foreigners. And that's why he says, is there no danger to our liberty and independence in a bank that in its nature has so little to bind it, okay, to our country? Right? Controlling our currency, receiving our... So this is what the bank will do. It'll be controlling currency. It'll be receiving public monies. It'll be holding thousands of our citizens and dependents. Okay? That would be more formidable or formidable, depending on your emphasis, and dangerous than a military power of the enemy. All right? Now, contrast that, he says, if government will confine itself to equal protection, just as heaven showers its rains, and when it rains, it showers the favor. It rains on the rich folks, and it rains on the poor folks just alike. What if we had the government would actually then have a currency that would be based on equity and not just have the rich being able to control it? Okay, so that's part of the struggle. So I want you to be able to quote back and say, all right, the Rothschilds and the Bank of England in 1816 backed the Central Bank of America, called the Second Bank of the United States. And Jackson, president, said, no, I don't like that. All right, now, Tavon, let's take us a little bit further to see what else Jackson said and did in this. Read that next paragraph, Tavon.
Okay. Andrew Jackson, in 1832, Jackson ordered the withdrawal of government deposits from the Second Bank and instead has them put into savings bank. The Second Bank head, Nicholas Billings, was quite candid about the power of intention of the bank when he openly threatened to cause a depression if the bank was not rechartered. We quote, "Nothing but widespread suffering will produce an effect on Congress. Only our safety is pursuing a steady course of firm restriction. And I have no doubt that such a course will ultimately lead to restoration of the currency and recharter of the bank." Nicholas Biddle.
Go ahead, read that. I'll let you go ahead with that one.
Okay. Nicholas Biddle, 1836, by calling in existing loans of refusing to issue new loans, he did cause a massive depression. But in 1836, when the charter ran out, the Second Bank ceased to function. It was then he made these two famous statements. "The bank is trying to kill me, but I will kill it." And later, "If the American people only understood the rank justice of our money and banking system, there would be a revolution before morning." Andrew Jackson, when he asked what he felt was the greatest achievement of his career, Andrew Jackson replied without hesitation, "I killed the bank." However, we will see this was not the end of a power influence passing itself off as officially we look at it.
Okay, so y'all got this part of the struggle, right?
Yeah.
All right, I don't want no junk. I want y'all to know the struggle. This is a story, okay? This is a history class. So it's a social studies class. I want you to understand this struggle back and forth, okay? The next one he's going to get into is Abraham Lincoln in the Civil War, okay? But I really want you to understand this struggle between, because this is the essence of the Secret of Oz, between money that's controlled by bankers, now called the Federal Reserve, before they're called the Second Bank of the United States, okay? And different presidents and other people who were against that way of getting money into the economy. Okay, so your job is to understand the struggle. Now, part of what you're going to be doing along the way is you're going to learn and meet Andrew Jackson if you didn't know him before, okay? You're going to meet some of these historical figures that you'll need to know as you go into college and as you're talking and dealing with folks in this culture, okay? At the same time, you will be learning something that is often kept from people. I went through school, went through college, went through grad school, and I didn't know this struggle. And you're not supposed to know it because you're supposed to just be dumbfounded and give your money away, okay? So what I want you to do is read this, just continue down this website. This is your homework, okay? All right? So that you then extract. But I don't want you to just take your simple notes. I don't care, in fact, about all the details. I want you to do enough details to tell the story. But I want you to be able to tell me the struggle, okay? And who were the players and who were the actors. In fact, write up a essay based on what you have here of the struggle, okay? So I want to know the drama. What's the drama? And if there are any key things that people said that are important to you to help you understand. Because in those quotes, what you just, at least you can say, according to Andrew Jackson, here's what he thought about central banks, okay, or the Second Bank of the United States. He said that banks that, central banks who are not bound to our country, okay, who control our currency and receive our public monies, that's a danger to our liberty and independence. Now, if you don't understand how that is, then that becomes a question. So how was that a danger? Okay, that then becomes a question that helps you then understand, and you bring it back to class, or we do research. Yes, Tavon.
I had to ask a question. Did you want us to write one essay about all the struggles, and read it, or did you want us to write one essay about that particular issue?
Two things I want you to do. One, I want you to take notes, and I'll see your notes based on what you've extracted about the struggle. Okay, what are the key? What's the key elements of the struggle? Okay, so if you were summarizing this, it would be the players, Rothschilds, Second Bank of the United States versus Andrew Jackson. Okay, and Andrew Jackson in this corner, and this is what he wanted. Here's what the Second Bank wanted. Andrew Jackson throws the punch. Bow. All right. What was the counterpunch? So all y'all get stuck. What was the counterpunch to Andrew Jackson? Well, what was Andrew Jackson's punch? Tell me. From what we read, Abdullah, what was his punch?
Saying that he's going to kill the bank.
Oh, right there. In 1832, Andrew Jackson ordered the withdrawal of government deposits from the Second Bank and instead put them in the safe banks. That was his punch. I'm not talking about his punch line. I'm talking about what he actually did.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's how you talk about the drama. So you got in this corner, you got the Second Bank of the United States backed by the Rothschilds and other folks from wealthy folks from England. In this corner, you have Andrew Jackson. Okay, Andrew Jackson thought the money in those banks was dangerous to the independence and liberty. Boom. The Second Bank wanted the control. Okay, and he lays out what he said. Now, what was then Nicholas Biddle's and the Second Bank's counterpunch, Tavon?
They removed the bank?
No, he called in, existing loans and refusing to issue new loans. It caused depression.
That's right. He caused a massive depression, and he said, if you don't do this, then we're going to cause a depression. And this is part of what you're going to be understanding. So how can people cause depression? Well, if you lent out the money and you says, okay, I want all my money back in, okay, then then there's not much money in circulation, and he refused to loan it back out. Okay, so there's a depression in terms of the money that's flowing. Because folks have gotten used to a level of money that's flowing in the economy, okay? And so central bankers, or the government for that matter, can expand the amount of money, or contract the amount of money, and so when you're looking again at the Secret of Oz, you'll hear them talking about money freely for public use. So when they talk about, you know, different Julius Caesar and other folks, you want to pay attention to that. Okay, so we'll be going back and forth to it, but you keep the storyline. So bam, if you were reporting this, you says in this corner Andrew Jackson, and here's what he was afraid of, and here's what he was wanted, and here's what he was determined to do. In this corner there was Nicholas Biddle representing the Second Bank, backed by the Rothschilds and other folks from England, and here's what they wanted. So, bam, so now you got this set up, and they bouncing around the ring, and Andrew Jackson throws the first punch, bow, he takes the money, and removes all of the government deposits from the Second Bank and put in the safe banks. Nicholas Biddle responds, bow, uppercut, all of the American citizens who have money, owed to the Second Bank, they call it in, you know, causing a depression, okay, and his plan is only safety is in pursuing a steady course of firm restriction. You got to know these little words, restrictions. That means I'm going to pull the money in. And then he says, I have no doubt, Nicholas Biddle, that such a course will ultimately lead to restoration of the currency and rechartering of the bank. Okay? All right. So, you that's what you got. Now, and in the end, in this round, Andrew Jackson says the greatest thing in his presidency, the greatest single thing was to kill the bank. Okay? So he did that. Now you're dealing with Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, 1861-1865, okay, with the central bank killed off, fractional reserve banking, okay, and now here's where the dates matter a little bit. So this was in 1836, okay, now Abraham Lincoln, another president, you know, Andrew Jackson vetoed the bank bill to the Senate in 1832. You see that right at the beginning of this next section? Then Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War. So now you're getting a little bit of that story, okay? And so is there any struggle as you work to understand the central bank versus the issuing debt-based money and the government borrowing its money from the central bank and government having money that is not based on debt? Whether it's backed by gold or not backed by gold is not the important thing right now, okay? It's understanding debt money that to run the government that comes with debt built in, or money or doesn't come with debt built in. So see what you get, okay? And as you go through some of the other stuff, you know, and we'll see. So you see what's some of the struggles, what's some of the stories, okay? And don't have to go past, you know, part three. Just see what you can take in of the struggles. And but that's the kind of how I want you to get it, okay? And if you say something like firm restriction, you don't understand it, don't pretend you understand it. Either look it up or bring it back to class. Says Bible Kessler, what does he mean by that? That lets me know that you're really trying to understand it, you know, and you're not just going through the motions, okay? Now, I know I'm over time, and there's a short clip that I want you to see having to do it right now so that you understand the connection that we're making. So just let me find that clip, because we're going back so that we can understand now. On the way back, we understand these people that you'll need to know if you have a decent education in America, the presidents and blah, blah, blah. But you also are learning stuff that you... that will be really, really useful to you. And I'm looking for a gentleman. He's an economist. His name is David, and I want you to write this down. David C-A-Y Justin. Let me try to find him. Stanton, I think it is. David Clay K. Johnston, David K. Johnston. He's an economist. Okay. Y'all bear with me, and then you'll get your full lunch after this. But we always got to take it back and take it forward. Click on that, please, and tell me when it started. We'll watch 5 minutes, and then we'll stop. We'll watch to 5 minutes in, and then stop.
Okay. So,
Okay, folks, you can stop. Just stop it right there. I mean, although I want you for homework that's your third part of your homework. You got three parts now. Finish watching this. But let's just want to make sure that you notice the notes that I put here or anything you want to say, you know, any wows, any whatever. This is now, okay? Anything you want to say about this? All right, remember?
It was just...
Go ahead, son.
For my thing, for me, it was just like, it was really interesting to see all those people that didn't have jobs, and then he was like, how many of you guys are desperate? And it was just like a lot of hands. I was like, God.
That's right. And that's now, y'all. That's now. And that's in the white community. It is triple that in the black community, and I'm not exaggerating, and we'll get to that, okay? And the reason that is because those affects our family members. Those are the connected. Those are the people that are most close to us. Doesn't mean we don't care about everybody. We do. And we ought to also understand what the condition is in our communities. So in his case, one in every 34 person. If we put that among black people, we'll probably end up being like one in every 10. Okay, completely out of work. Okay, what does that do? Also, now if we're talking about central banks and stuff like that, you're going to begin to do a connection between, he says, we create a system where Goldman Sachs has a close to monopoly position, okay, in terms of money, and created policies that's causing enormous shifts about who is working and who has a job. So while certain people are like, ain't got no money and struggling, okay, people in our community particularly, okay, and others, but at the very top, you got folks getting wealthy. I mean, bonuses were given out. Wall Street gave out bonuses. They give them out at the end of the year. We're not talking about salaries, but bonuses. He just talked about salaries. Salaries of $10 million a week, okay? They gave out bonuses of $1.1 billion. Just one Wall Street firm. I think it was Goldman Sachs, okay? So, and things are great. So when you're talking about hard economic times, you're only talking about where money is flowing, who controls the money flow, and it's flowing in some communities, and in other communities it's not. So in those communities, you have depression and out of work, and those are the conditions under which they establish their own currency. Okay? All right. You have your work cut out for you, you definitely want you to understand, watch this whole David K. Johnson, remember his name, you're going to be watching a number of videos by him, and we're going to be dealing with the connection between what's going on now and what's been going on historically, how what was going on historically played into what's happening right now, okay? So you have both the history course and you have a course that gives you understanding of current events, okay? So you got the YAT site around the history of money, part two, that you're going to be summarizing and writing an essay on and bringing questions back. You're also going to be watching this and making sure that you take notes on it and that you remember it. I want you to like have it in your head, okay? Not just have it where you got to go to your notes. And then there was one thing that I typed in the text chat here that I put the word homework in just a second ago, and just want to bring that to your attention so that you're clear about that. Where did I have it? Homework. Okay. He mentioned at the very beginning of this, that is in the 60-minute segment, he asked people, how many of you have cashed out your 401ks? How many of you cashed out your RAs? So part of your homework is, what is a 401k? What is an RA? All right? Y'all have a good class. Please take down notes of what you learned, what we talked about, in your own notes, in your own words. Okay? We've covered a lot of material, so please review it. All right. Take care. Have a good lunch. Good rest of the day.
Hey, Tavon. I'm going to probably be back around like 1:30. Where's Tavon? Oh, he left. All right.
Yeah, I'm here.